Welcome to another episode of Three Men in a War Game. I'm Paul, and, I haven't been doing very much hobbying at all because I've gotten sucked into the world of Brandon Sanderson.
This is Kevin. I haven't been doing a lot of hobbying because I'm a new dad and I have a baby.
And this is Chris, and I haven't done a whole lot of hobbying because I just suck at life.
I believe it's called Crunchyroll. Isn't that what you said you got?
Shh, be quiet. Don't tell them about my anime fixation.
You just told them.
Paul, can you rewind? Edit that out, please.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's going right
absolutely.
Out. Yeah.
I trust you completely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and on a serious tip, I did have a baby, but I also have somehow managed to get most of my Bushido miniatures from my starter painted. So that's feeling pretty good. And I actually played another 35 rice game with Bushido recently and had a great time.
I forgot it was called rice.
Is that a legit term?
Yeah, for sure. That's the point cost of your models is the rice cost.
I can't tell if that's cool or racist.
No, I mean, that's how, if you look back into feudal Japan, barrels of rice or kokus of rice were currency. So.
Oh, no, I know. Still.
I think it's legit, man, especially since, like, all the names of all the characters are, like, legit Japanese names that I butcher every time I try to read them. But anyway, yeah, I played a 35 rice game, My Cult of Yurei versus Aaron's Jung Pirates, and it was a great time. Such a good game.
Did you win?
I did. Yeah.
It's always good.
Due to much jank. The Yurei guys are awful.
As in, like, they're a bad team and you wouldn't recommend them, or?
So, like, the leader of my warband, or whatever you want to call it, army for Bushido, his name is Kato, the puppet master, and he...
Not Kalen.
Not Kalen. He works really well.
Kids, ask your grandparents.
O.J. Simpson, it was a whole thing, you guys. But the, he works well with these zombies called K-Ray. And the thing about the Kairai is that...
Is it like Korean, you know, pop music?
No. But if you guys keep interrupting me, I'm going to fucking kill you. Anyway, Paul, they're cheap, they're low rice cost models. And they have an ability on them called Rise. And basically, anytime you kill one, you roll a dice. And it has a chance of not dying and being back on full wounds.
That's amazing.
And then if they're within 8 inches of Kato, Kato can devote some of his chi to lowering their rice cost. And you can make it so that you rise on a 2+, which is gross.
Oh, that's nasty.
Yeah, so you're basically just like middle fingering everywhere. And it's basically a faction where you're using these like low cost models to tie down important models while you're taking objectives.
Sure.
That's essentially how my army plays, and that's what I did. And it was basically sort of unfair because I had played with the Young Pirates before and I knew what they did, and Aaron had no idea what my guys did, and I didn't do it, you know, we didn't really talk too much about it, so he was just kind of like, it does what?
So what you're saying is next time he'll be a little more prepared and it might not be quite so lopsided.
Exactly. It won't go the same way next time. I mean, he's really competent. Like, he got 4th place in the Malifaux Masters at Adepticon, and he's going to be on Schemes and Stones in a couple weeks. So, I mean, he's not a bad war gamer.
Oh, that's good.
He just got caught off guard by my guys.
Yeah, and that's tough, and especially if you're learning the game. I'm assuming he's in a process of learning the game.
Both of us, sure.
Yeah, so that's tough to then have to deal with, like, the low-cost tie-up and not know how to get out of it.
Super jank, and I had been thinking about how to use them effectively, right? So, like, it was just all in all a bad situation.
That definitely sounds like it.
Well, I mean, it sounds like a bad situation for Aaron, not you.
Right.
Right, yeah. But definitely, though, since I mentioned it, look out for his Sheamus episode on Schemes and Stones coming up, because he's a terrifying Sheamus player.
That's fantastic. I'm a terrible Sheamus player. But
he's very good, and he uses Wave 5 Sheamus to terrible effect.
That's just scary.
Yeah, see, it's pretty rough to play against.
My thing with Malifaux right now is that everybody's screaming for a Nicodem nerf, and I was like the only person playing him when I was playing a lot.
Yeah, he's really good right now.
Yeah. I know, it kind of makes me want to like get back into it hardcore and be like, why does he need a nerf?
Yeah, but his Wave 5 updates are really good.
Yeah, that and additional models and all that stuff.
That's also true.
So, Chris, what have you been up to lately?
Yeah, playing a lot of Star Wars lately. That game has been dominating my hobby time. I got 800 point games in now. Because you and I played two, I believe. And yep. Then I played Ray, one of the local guys here, against his Rebels the other day. So, I think that's been pretty much it.
So, the last time we recorded an episode, Chris, you and I hadn't yet played an 800 point game. And how do you feel now that you're playing the 800 points? You're full on into the selection process as far as objectives and deployment and environment.
I'm loving it, man. After playing three games of full size games with objectives, especially with, you know, the fact that, yeah, right now the objectives are limited. You've got three, you know, you got three objectives, three deployment types, three weather types that you have to deal with. Like, so right now, yeah, it's a little limited, but seeing that, you know, all the new terrain packs are going to come out with expansions on that, probably, you know, give it 4 or 5 months, the ability for you to play the same scenario setup and everything 2-3 times in a row is going to become, you know, little to not possible. So that kind of randomness I'm absolutely loving. I'm really excited to start seeing how Fantasy Flight does it from the competitive standpoint. I think that's going to be the kicker for me, whether this becomes my main game or not, is how competitive play is going to be done. Because I'm just right now casual play, super enjoying it. It's a lot of fun for me. It's hitting all the boxes for me for what I want. It's fast, it's fun, it's thematic, and it's got a little bit of level of complexity that I didn't expect it to have once you start throwing those objectives in.
One of the things that I really liked about it, and we saw it when we played our games, I don't remember if it was 2 days in a row that we played or what, but we played with two different deployment setups where we were on the long... one day we were on the long table edge, one day we were on the short table edge. And even just that completely changed the approach to the game.
Yeah, because when we did the long side, that's when we had the reinforcements. So we were playing, you know, long ways, and then we've got all of a sudden three of our units are completely missing that we can't even play with until like what, round two or three. So
yeah, because they come out round two but can't do anything.
Right. And I can't remember, was it breakthrough our objective on that one?
It was the three objectives along the center line. So basically right. There was one at the end of my deployment zone, one at the end of your deployment zone, and one in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah, so I like that one. So I got to play that one. So I think I've played all the objectives, because when I played Ray, I played Breakthrough. And that one was interesting because we also had the weather type that made it so nothing was visible beyond range 2 on turn 2, range 3 on turn 3, or sorry, turn 1 was 2-inch, or range 2, turn 2 was range 3. And it really, I think I had the upper hand coming in as Empire, because I literally turtled on my deployment zone and just shot him as he walked across the board, because I couldn't see anything, and he couldn't wound me because of my armor, and I just turtled up and was like, all right, come at me, bro.
Yeah, you get lucky with your armor rolls. I hate your damn stormtroopers with those red dice.
It is great, and I'm loving the fact that snowtroopers are getting it too. Still.
Oh, are they? That's a piece of.
Yep. Snowtroopers are exactly the same as stormtroopers, except for they're 4 points more, and they come with steady instead of precise.
What's steady?
Steady allows them to make a free attack action after moving. So I can I can move, aim, and then shoot.
Ooh. Or I can move, dodge, move, and shoot.
Right, move, dodge, shoot, move, shoot.
Yeah, God. Yeah, they're really flexible.
That's there's a lot of... And then they have the flamethrower, too, which is going to be nasty.
They have the flamethrower, which is one black dice per model that you're shooting at. So if you've got five dudes in a unit, I get five black dice. You have three dudes in a unit, I get three black dice.
Yeah.
And it ignores cover, range one. Then they also get an ion gun. It's range 2-4, I think.
Hmm. But it looks like you only get like one shot per reload with it too.
Correct.
And, yeah, that's how the Rebel Trooper one is.
One black dice, two white dice, but it's impact one, an ion.
I think the Rebel one might be two black dice or two red dice.
I think the Stormtrooper one's a little bit different than the Rebel one. But for those of you that don't know what ion does is on vehicles, when you shoot against vehicles, it puts a condition up that makes it so a vehicle loses one action.
Which can be huge.
Yep.
Can be huge.
Yeah, that's some anti-RT tech.
Yep. And right now, after playing against Ray, we definitely learned in that game that right now the state of the game for Rebels, I really feel that the Snowspeeder is not worth the point cost at your current options for the. You really want to span those AT-RTs.
Yeah, I would much rather have a third AT-RT than the Speeder right now.
Well, what's pretty interesting, thinking about that, even points-wise, I mean, the Snowspeeder is only 20 points less than the AT-ST, and I think you get a lot more use out of the AT-ST.
Well, it really depends on the Speeder. I feel like I haven't seen a lot of people use it as aggressively as they should. It's really good if you get it right in your opponent's grill really fast, but it goes down quick. So, I mean, if you don't get your points out of it, it's not that great.
That's what happened with my opponent. So he did ram it down my throat, but he got unlucky with his dice rolls when he shot it. The next turn, I got to go first, or get to choose first, and I basically walked Vader up, threw a lightsaber into it, and then I would pumped two Stormtrooper units, one of them with a rocket launcher, so you know, which is impact three.
And so, see, like, there's something to be said for that, because he did use a lot of your AP.
He did, you know, and that's one unit. That's what we talked about. Like because he was complaining about it. I'm like, dude. I was like, you just took my big beater in Darth Vader, and then you also had two of my Stormtrooper units that
got
dedicated to killing that thing, which means I ignored your other Rebel troop unit that was coming up the flank with the AT-RT.
Right, and that possibly delays Vader from getting to your units at all.
Vader really didn't get in combat at all, in that he was very much a kind of ranged.
Yeah, and I think that's what the Snowspeeder is supposed to do, or the T-47 is supposed to do. And like I said, if you get lucky, that if you put the anti-personnel gun on the rear arc of that T-47, it's gross, man. You're just a lawnmower, because you have a pretty bad gun from the front, and pretty good gun, and a really good gun on the back.
Yeah, I think he expected me to bring my AT-ST, so he brought a little bit more anti-armor. But I was watching some of the guys on YouTube, one of the guys on YouTube, and I feel he's right that just taking the AT-ST and Vader in the same point or the same list is just a lot of points. I mean, that's pretty much, you know, almost half my army.
It is half your army because it's 195 and 200 before upgrades.
Yeah. So I mean, I tried it this time, brought in five Stormtrooper units. Two speeder bike units and Vader, and it worked great. I absolutely loved the feel of it. That game changed my mind on how those rocket launchers work, and I'm now a fan of the rocket launchers where I wasn't before.
I'm really looking forward to the Veers 2 AT-ST lists that we're going to start seeing.
Oh, yep. Lord.
You will see that probably next week, because my Veers comes in tomorrow.
Yep. Oh, does he really?
Yep, so I might pick up my second AT-ST with them tomorrow.
Jeez.
Yeah, I checked with Scott today. He's got a release a street date of April 26th, so he should be in tomorrow.
It's definitely tomorrow. I saw people were getting their FFG direct orders today.
Wow.
Like people were getting beers today.
So hopefully that means Leia's in a way.
Definitely loving the game. It is. I mean, I made the comment of, you know, after playing the first 800-point game of, I think I'm going to sell every other game I own and just play this exclusively. And, like, even though I will never do that, it's it's very, if I say that, I'm really invested in that game. Like, I'm enjoying the hell out of it because I love my other miniature games.
One of the things that where I realized this game was really good, one of the games that I did get to play was I played a demo game with our friend Kevin, because, you know, I have, basically all my friends all have the same name. So you're either like a Kevin or a Chris if you're my friend. So we're playing with Bab, Kevin Bab, and we did, I think I set up like 500 points. And with Kevin, one of the things with him as a wargamer is that he's invested in like 30,000 points worth of Tau or something ridiculous like that, maybe 20,000.
Oh, yeah, it's an insane amount of Tau. I've seen the collection.
it's insane. And so he's like, I'm
apostrophes.
Yeah, he's just like, I don't want to, you know, learn another game system. I'm deeply invested in this. But he asked me to try it out because we were going to play 40K, and with the day that we were having, the time we had to play, we didn't quite have the time. And I said, you know, if you want to learn Legion, I can teach you Legion with the amount of time we have, but I don't know that we're going to get a worthwhile game of 40K in. So we tried it, and he played Empire, and I played Rebels, because that's how I do. You know, he ended up buying into it. You know, this was somebody who, for years, has been like, nope, not learning any new games. Nope, it's Tau or nothing. Nope. And he bought it. So that says a lot about the quality of this game.
Yeah, and you know, one thing that I'll say about it that I haven't really hit on, and I, you know, I don't like rehashing the same subjects, right, because there are podcasts that do that that I don't like, but I'll say one thing that I found about Legion is it hits the right note for me in terms of terrain, and that terrain is really player three, and that's one of my favorite parts of wargaming is games that have terrain rules that work well for the game, because ultimately it gives you a ton more variability, right? Like, even with three objectives, like, I could play the same deployment objective weather scenario in Legion, but just completely reconfigure the terrain, and we could have a different game. And that's not true in 40K right now. That's not true in Age of Sigmar. There's a lot of games where the terrain really is for show and doesn't matter.
Right.
And in this game, it really has a huge impact, and I'm very much a fan of it.
The terrain feels as important in Legion as it does in Malifaux.
That's correct.
That's what I was exactly about to say.
Yep, and again, you know, you guys know how I feel about Malifaux, right? That's like my main jam, and I think I agree, it is as important. I don't know that I agree with Fantasy Flight's 25%. I played a game that was more like 35-40% terrain coverage. It's like a real sweet spot for Legion, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, we played a pretty terrain. When I played Ray, we played a pretty terrain dense game.
Pretty dense, yeah. I mean, once you start putting the ATST down, and there's like, you know, there's a lot of, it just makes the maneuvering a lot more difficult, right? And like putting some like height for vegetation so that the repulsor vehicles can't just go wherever they want.
Right.
Yep.
Makes like a huge difference, and it just makes the game feel much more tactical. And I think that's a good thing. I think that's to the game's benefit.
Yeah, and I think Paul, when in our games, I think that was one of the things that were hurting you was because of the fact that basically my speeders could go anywhere they wanted, and my ATST was seeing anything he wanted. We
right.
didn't have a lot of high terrain, whereas like I played Ray, and there were points where we played with, you know, the huge giant pillar rocks, and you know his snow speeder couldn't see me at all,
right?
And so that really helped, like, you know, for a turn be able to block my troops and make that snow speeder not worthwhile, plus as well as his back arc, because, you know, same way. So I think, you know, that was some of the mistakes that you and I played in our game, and that's why I think it was a little rough.
Well, one thing I want to point out with our game, Chris, was that regardless of the terrain that we had, I mean, we could have had no terrain on the board, whatever. My dice rolls wouldn't have hit shit.
Yeah. But, again, you're a rebel and a traitor.
But I couldn't hit shit, couldn't save shit. Like, I mean, you know, basically rolling a 5 or a 6 on those save dice, and I rolled. I got excited when we were in, like, turn 5, and I saved the guy. I mean, it was bad, and I mean, you know, Chops, earlier you were talking about the T-47, the guns on the front and the infantry killer on the back. I had that, and I didn't hit a damn thing.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. I mean, you can't do anything about bad dice.
No.
I also, like, stuck behind cover two the entire time. So, you know, I'm taking dice away, and yes, my armor saves were hot shit.
Yeah, your armor saves were ridiculous. I think I killed, like, what, one stormtrooper? Now, against Bab, when I was playing against Bab, I had much better rolls, so apparently it's just against you.
I'm okay with that.
And, you know, I was taking out his stormtroopers a lot more than I do against you. And, I mean, it's the same statistic, so it was definitely just a flub.
A fluke.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, like I told you, Chris, the second game we played, you know, despite the miserable dice rolls, I was still having fun.
Yeah, and, like, you know, like we talked, like, that was probably the most fun I have played a war game since discovering War Machine back in the mid-2000s, when I first picked up War Machine. For me, I haven't played a war game that was that much fun since then.
Yeah, just intrinsically fun, you know. Yep. Dynamic and tactical.
Yeah, you know, so, and I know that our local game store, for anybody that's listening in Raleigh area or close to it, I know that they're going to be trying to actually do a Legion tournament here soon. If Fantasy Flight doesn't have the competitive rules out by then, they're just going to try and go just make up their own kind of to do what they can for the competitive point. So once they get the dates and stuff, we'll promote that.
No, May 5th at Gamers Armory. It's already been announced. Yes, yeah, it's May been 5th. Announced.
I'll go to it's right after May the 4th.
Yep, they're going to do a Revenge of the 5th. They're going to do a essentially an escalation kind of league or game day is what Scott's envisioning. Very maybe cool. Go 400, 600, 800 just to get people to feel for it and kind of that tournament environment.
Yeah, so I won't be able to participate, but anybody in the local area, come out and support the Gamers Armory. Scott's done, you know, right by me and Paul. So come and help these guys out.
Yeah, and I'm gonna try to go, but my kid has her SAT that day and she doesn't have her license yet, so I got a driver. So I don't know what that's going to look like, but I'm hoping to go.
Yeah, I'm going to stop by, but I won't be able to play because I'll have my I've got my kids that weekend. So
I was going to say, if you don't have your kids and I can't play, let's go later in the day and just grab a table off to the side. But
yep,
you good to have your kids.
Got the kiddos.
There's something else going on the 12th. Speaking of Gamers Armory, oh yeah, that's the 12th, the week after, Chris, is the Rat Catchers event.
Ooh, I'll have to bring my blacksmiths.
Yeah, so this way you can get your cheese ball.
I've got my anvil ball, man. I'm good.
No, but you
got
to have a cheese ball. I saw somebody on Facebook strapped it to the back of a rat. It was pretty hilarious.
I like that. Yeah. I'll have to look for that image.
I'll see if I can find it for you since you don't do the Book of Faces.
No, I don't. I like my my internet security and my privacy. I don't like my information being sold to the government.
Chris Potter, he lives in Raleigh, North Carolina.
So you guys sitting slack-jawed wondering what just happened. They just effortlessly transitioned into talking about Guild Ball. If you guys aren't familiar with the game of Guild Ball, there's a new minor league Guild Ball team called the Rat Catchers who came out on Friday.
Yeah. Chops, you said you already picked them up, correct?
Yeah, because I'm a degenerate. I can't help myself.
What, any thoughts on them now that you've seen the cards and have looked at them?
Much jank, like a lot. I'm really looking forward to playing with the disease. There's a new condition in the box called disease. And for those who play Guild Ball and you're not familiar at this point, it essentially makes it harder to remove conditions with the take a breather. And it makes it much more punitive. So it really makes it easier to make conditions like knockdown and poison stick. Mm-hmm. And they do all those things. They knock down and they poison like crazy. So it's and they have lots of auras and also interlacing auras. And it's real bad. I think the team is going to be very good. I think they're competitive right out of the box, which is what Steamforge wanted to do. I think they'll be very fun to play against. I think they'll be fun to play as, and I think that while they might be frustrating to play against, they won't cause negative play experiences. I think it's a fun puzzle for your opponent to try to solve, and that's the right way to design a janky team.
Well, one of the things too with Guild Ball in general, for those of you who may not be familiar with this game, is that all of the teams have a very distinct play style, right? So it's not like you're not going to find analogs so much between teams. You know, you might see You know, strikers have some type of kind of standard, you know, stat line, but there will be a lot of variation in how they carry out their objective, right? So each team's very much like that, and they're not going deep as far as the model lines, so they're all kind of stopping about 12 players on each team. So you can really keep that, as they call it, guild identity, pretty natural, you know? And these minor teams are kind of meant to enhance one of the guilds that's already out. So, like, the Rat Catchers, they kind of team up with the Morticians, which is a very control-based guild, right? So now you're throwing a control-based guild, and you're giving them the damned if you do, damned if you don't option. You know, and that's really what the Rat Catchers do. For instance, their team captain, a guy named Piper, right? He's got an 8-inch aura, right? And once during his activation, the model chooses one enemy model in the aura, and your opposing player gets to decide the effect, right? So they either end up making a jog towards the chosen model, or the, you know, like Piper gets to move towards the enemy model, or the enemy model gets to move towards Piper. But the cool thing is that instead of just saying, hey, you're going to move towards me all the time, you're leaving it up to the other person to make that hard choice for themselves.
Yeah, and almost every player has that. Like, it would be the choice between taking 3 damage or poison 2. I don't remember exactly what the choice is on that card, but there are other effects that are... Oh, no, it's bleed. It's either taking bleed or 3 immediate damage. And, yeah. You know, sometimes taking bleed's not great, because if you're sitting in a double disease cloud, it's going to cost you 3 momentum to pull the bleed off, or whatever, right? Like, or 2 momentum. Either, or right. Yeah, no, it's 3. So it's bad news, and it's a terrible choice either way. But as Paul said, it gives your opponent some agency.
I don't like a lot of janky teams. I'm more of a straightforward beat 'em up kind of type, but that's interesting to bring in that whole level of, like, you get to choose. It's kind of that mind fuck, but without being a mind fuck.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's really great.
But then it's, like, also got a little bit of the more passive type of make your choice, because, like, the one model, Pelage or Pelagi or Pelagi or however you say it.
Team Forge will let us know eventually.
Yeah, exactly. Right? So, like, with her, if you hit her, you don't generate any momentum points.
Which is a currency that you have to use in Guild Ball.
Yeah, it's one of your resource management. So, really...
I am not a fan of that.
Yeah, you start... But the thing is, she's only got 10 health. So, you want to hit her.
Right.
But you're not going to generate any... momentum. And if you...
Yeah. As a blacksmith or a butcher player, oof...
And here's the other thing that's, as a butcher player, that's scary, right? Is that she also hits +1 damage against male characters, and if you end engaged with her, you take 3 damage. So, like, if you're gonna hit her, you gotta come correct, right? You gotta kill her.
Well, it chops. It's one of those one of those optional things, right? So if you end up within 2 inches of her, the opposing player chooses one of the following: you're either snared, which gives you +1 to hit, essentially, or you take 3 damage.
Right, and you don't want to be snared, because all of the rat catchers hit hard at the end of their playbooks.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. That,
like, even her, even Pelagi. Go listen to it. Go listen to a Guild Ball podcast if you want to know how to say it.
She has a momentous 3 at the end, right?
Yeah,
at the end of her playbook. Yeah, she hits real hard.
I mean, it's a momentous double dodge, and then the next column over is a momentous 3 damage.
Only momentous 3? Come on, you guys can do better
again
than that.
It's momentous 4 against males, and a lot of the characters in Guild Ball are male.
And she's got a second column singled out, so there's a good chance that she'll get there.
Ooh, yeah, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, and that's a 4 influence model, too, so... You know, she can do a whole lot.
She's real good.
And they don't necessarily want to hit her back.
Yeah, she's 2-4.
Yeah, 2-4.
She's 2-4? Ooh.
And a 5-0.
What's her defense and armor?
5-0.
5-0. Yeah, she's basically the Rat Catcher's Kasset.
Yeah.
But Kasset's a 4-0. Kasset's a lot easier to kill.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, this is basically like a Kasset that's a little more survivable.
Yeah.
Actually, a lot more. 5-0 is a big difference between 4-0. I mean, holy crap, a 6-8 move.
Incredibly good.
Jeez.
Anyway, I'm looking forward to playing the Ratcatchers. I think as soon as I finish my, I've got my like painting queue lined up right now. As soon as I finish my Cult of Uray Bushido models, I'm gonna paint the Ratcatchers, and then I'm gonna paint the Old Father's Harvest, and I'm gonna try and start promoting Guild Ball locally. We've got a guy who does it, and I just want to start playing more. I've been really itching to play.
Well, good.
Good game. Ton of fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Plays real quick. You've played it a little bit though, right, Chops?
Oh yeah, I've played probably 25 to 30 games of Guild Ball. I've played plenty. It's just I learned Malifaux, and then I politely put my Guild Ball models on a shelf, and I haven't touched them in a long time. And I think I'm ready to jump back in. Like I actually legitimately miss playing it. So I'm
going to
try and start it up again.
Chops, you are literally the exact opposite of me. I was playing Malifaux, discovered Guild Ball, and politely put my Malifaux models up and have never touched them since.
I mean, it's one of those things, right? Like, we go through phases as war gamers, and there's certain itches that we're looking to scratch, right? And Malifaux just scratches the itch real good for me. And it's just come to the fact that I really want to play a game where, for me, there's like it's a single scenario, and I want to roll dice, and I want to roll handfuls of dice, and I don't necessarily want to do it playing AOS or 40K. I like the theme of Guild Ball. I like the resource management in Guild Ball, and I miss it. I want to play it some more.
So, have you ever played on the clock?
I have, and that's actually the way I'd play it going forward is on the clock. Yeah. That's the last 10 or 15 games or so I played on the clock, and I swore I'd never play off the clock again.
It is the way to play that game, in my opinion. It's designed to be played on the clock.
Well, and it's a sports game, right? So, you know, if you're into soccer, you know, you always have that time that you're up against. So it adds that extra dynamic without being death clock.
Yeah, and the thing I like about it, too, is it's not like, and I'm saying this as a person who's never played War Machines, so you guys can slap me on the wrist if I'm wrong about this, but when you play on the clock with War Machine, it feels like you're being, like, a super neckbeardy competitive jackhole. When you play Guild Ball on the clock, the game just comes alive, even casually.
Yeah.
War Machine can definitely get that way. I have had the pleasure of actually watching some high-level competition at some of the cons I've been to, when I used to go to TempleCon, you know, watching JVM and some of the big guys that have played, and it can get that way, like to where the point where it's like, you touch this, no, you move there, that wiggled, like it can get neckbeardy.
Yep. Well, and I think that's one of the nice things about the you go, I go aspect of Guild Ball, right? Because you're not able to carry out your entire plan without the other people messing with you.
Yeah, alternate activations is definitely my preferred gameplay style.
You know, I didn't like it to begin with when I first started playing games that did it. Like, I think Loader was the first game I played with an alternating turn sequence like that, and I was very against it for years of playing 40K, years of playing Fantasy, and now it's... I'm like you. I don't want to play any other way. Like, to me, that's the way wargaming is meant to be played. That's the best.
Yeah. The only way that I'm okay with I go you go is in Infinity, because in Infinity it's really always your turn, right? Like,
even
when you're not the active player, you're still very much in it.
Yep.
But outside of Infinity, I prefer alternating activations.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that, you know, you play 40K or Age of Sigmar, and there are huge swaths of time where you're not doing anything.
You're just picking models up off the table.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
And for some people, that's just not an enjoyable experience. Like, I like 40K, I like Fantasy, but I know a lot of people out there, like, I played this game, I spent this many hours of, you know, putting models together, and literally, all I'm doing is just picking my shit up. This isn't fun.
Yeah. And that comes all around to the whole Guild Ball thing, bringing it back. The nice thing is that you're only ever playing with six models at a time, and they never die.
Nope. Even if you get taken off the pitch, they come back the next turn, right? The next game round.
Right. So you're never truly losing them.
Yeah, but I mean, the beauty though is that your opponent is scoring points.
Correct.
Instantly, when one of your models dies, that's the other thing that adds so much to the tension of Guild Ball is that every time you lose a model, it stings, right? Because if you, for example, I mean, if you lose six guys during the course of the game, you're done. That's it. That's the end of the game. They score 12 points and you lose. So it's really great that way.
And the other thing too, you know, we were talking about resource management with the momentum earlier, but you end up with the two resource managements and you start off with the influence. And if you know that somebody's going to die, you know, or they're going to not die, but be taken off the pitch, do you give them influence or do you not give them influence? And if you're the opposing player and you're seeing that guy's about to be taken out and doesn't have any influence, then you can leave him be for a while.
Right.
And do something else.
The other thing, too, is the boomerang goal, right? Like, there are times when you're like, you know what? If you're an alchemist player, you're like, I don't mind if I lose Midas. As long as he scores that boomerang, he jumps across the table, he scores a goal, he scores a second goal. I don't care if you kill him, right? I'll take 6 points to your two.
Yeah, well, that's like
that's
with Shark.
Exactly like Fish used to be with Shark back in the day.
Oh, it's still that way.
Well, you're seeing more. I say back in the day because I'm saying you see more Corsair played with Fish right now than you do with Shark.
Yeah, well, that's true. But, I mean, with Shark, one of the things that I was playing with him, if I didn't draw the plot card that allowed him to move back to my side of the table, as far as I'm concerned, kill him. You know, kill him, take him out, put him back on my side of the table, I'm going to get him the ball and he's going to get another goal.
Yeah, I mean, there's been many games where you and I played, Paul, against your Fish, and it's like, as a Butcher player, I was like, you know what? Let him have the first turn goal, I'll take the takeout and kill the ball, and then I can just take out the rest of the Fish after that.
Yep.
There was too many times where I was trying to kill Shark to stop that turn one goal, and I was like, just not going to do it anymore. It's not worth it. Let him have it.
It's going to happen. That's the that's the thing. If you're playing Shark, he's going to score a goal.
Yep.
You know, the key, I think, not to give away all the tech, sorry, fisherman players, but the key is to just, you know, if they're going to get two goals, figure out how to stop that third one.
Yep. Yeah, well, also, the thing that the success that I had playing against Fish, and again, I might not have been playing against a really skilled Fish player, but pushing Shark 6 inches out of position and knocking him down was also very effective for me.
Depends on where he ends up and where the ball is, because he has so many ways to negate that, to move wherever the hell he wants to go, which is Shark's genius.
Right.
Shark's a jerk. I hate him.
He is. And there's, you know, if you, and again, for those of you that might not have played Guild Ball yet, this is where there is a completely different dynamic between different teams. You know?
Right, yeah. I'm going to actually describe it to our listeners the way you described it to me when you sold me on the game, Paul, and that the teams are designed on a triangle, right? And the tips of the triangle are killing, control, and goal scoring. And every guild is either at the tip of the triangle or in between two.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much where they sit. And the fishermen are a pure goal-scoring guild. So they are very fast and very slippery.
That's actually a really good way to explain it.
Yep. Yeah, and that's exactly what it is. And then, you know, the teams can accomplish that in different ways. Like, you have your fishermen who their kick stats aren't super high. You know, they're rolling 3 dice on their passes and their shots. But their maneuverability of the actual models is insane. Every single one of them, when they're swinging and hitting somebody, they're not looking to do damage. They're looking to move
to push
an inch. You know, they're not even that. They're dodging. You know, they're dodging that inch closer, that inch closer. You know, getting just into melee range and then pushing back out. But you know, the engineers are a footballing team as well. Whereas
they're a football control team.
Football control.
Yeah, exactly. So they're on that little different spot, but one of the interesting things is that where they're playing football differently than the Fish is that they're not as maneuverable, but they kick better. They're more accurate in their kicks. So they don't care if they couldn't get out of melee, because if you're in melee and you kick the ball, you lose a die. So they don't care because they're already at 4 die. So if they're engaged by one person, then they're kicking just as well as everybody else.
Yeah. Right.
You know, so you see that dynamic of, yes, the engineers are a footballing team. Yes, the fish are a footballing team. But they're doing it in completely different ways.
And yeah, that's the genius of Killball's design, is that the players, the teams all have their own personality.
Yeah, and see, that's why I like Butchers versus, like, Farmers. Both of them are almost pure beat-em-up teams. But Butchers still have that capability of playing football a little bit better than what I think Farmers are capable of doing it. Because we've got things like Brisket. We have sneak attacks like Shank. You know, the Boiler. These are guys that are, like, kind of sleeper goal scorers. But we can do it. And at the same time, we're just stabbing the hell out of you.
Yeah, Butchers are, yeah, they're great, right? On that side, you've got Brewers, Butchers, and Farmers, right? The beatdown teams.
Yep.
And Brewers are definitely the most takeout-focused.
Brewers are those control...
Or, sorry, Butchers. Butchers, yeah, are, more
Butchers are much more focused. Takeout. Like, going into a game, I fully expect to get 4 takeouts and 1 goal. That's
what I meant. Yeah, I definitely meant Butchers. But, yeah, 4 takeouts and a goal is definitely the way I've won every game with my Butchers.
Yep.
And it's almost always a goal with Shank or Brisket.
Yeah, yep. Now I have one with 6 takeouts. It's hard to do, but I have done it before. And that's with a fillet list, not with Ox.
Yeah.
Fillet just makes it so much easier to do it.
Right, yeah, she's good.
And for you English people, that's fillet.
Fillet. Yeah. Fillet. T is silent.
Yeah. Fill it.
Because we don't drink it here, that pansy stuff.
Hey, we have some listeners over there. Be nice. We want to keep them listening. Send all complaints to C. Potter.
You know what? I would love for them to come over and we can play. I would love for that to happen. And if I'm ever in England, I will stop by as well too and play. I will bring my stuff.
I'll bring filet.
I will bring filet. And yeah. Be taught how to properly speak her, because I'm so out of practice.
Yeah, we got to get you back into Guild Ball.
I know, my second Butcher's or Blacksmith's box is just sitting there unopened right now. So I'll have to use the 12th as my reason to go in and open it up and start playing with my new guys.
Yeah, you're
a bolt on the table.
Stupid horse.
I got to build my bolt. I got the alt bolt, so I got to finish building him, because the... high-rise, you know, kicking bolt is, or that's, it was weird. I don't know what Steamforge was looking for going with that model.
I know what they're going for. Yeah. It actually kind of replicates a statue of Dennis Bergkamp outside of the Emirates, where he's kind of leaping, he's leaping in the air and, you know, scoring a beautiful goal. I'll send you a link to the statue and you'll go, oh yeah, I see kind of what they're going for.
Yeah, you're talking about soccer and...
football, sir.
No, again, soccer for any of our British...
Please send all complaints to... I wanted to take a quick moment to just congratulate Chops on becoming a dad.
Hey, thank you. Yeah, congratulations, man. Greatest thing in the entire world. Have fun with it.
It was real easy for me. Since the baby's been born, obviously the work's picked up.
Well, we, you know, I've known you for a long time, Chops, and it's awesome. I'm so happy for you.
Hey, man, thank you so much. I'm I don't sound it because it's late, but I'm super stoked about it. She is amazing.
Awesome. Well,
kids are great. Kids, I mean, I want to throttle my kids sometimes, but man, I couldn't live without them. I love my two, so yeah. Congratulations, man, and have fun with that little girl. She grows up, because it's gonna go quick.
Oh God, yeah, that Chops. That's the thing. They grow up so fucking quick.
Yeah, man.
I mean, I'm
well, yours is what, 17, Paul?
17. We've been out driving every night this week, and she almost killed us yesterday. But I mean, absolutely fantastic and fun. But yeah,
I mean, she'll be rolling dice with me sooner than I expect.
Heck yeah, and that's just it. Here's the thing, and I was telling Potter this the one night. Enjoy every time you pick her up, because one day you'll realize that you haven't picked her up in a long-ass time because she's too big.
Yep, you can't do it anymore. My daughter turned 7 this Friday. I'm not ready for it. And it's already at that point where it's like, baby girl, you're getting a little heavy.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's my advice, is appreciate every time you can carry her in the car in the rain or anything like that, you know?
Enjoy it. Dude, I was holding her for the first 3/4 of this podcast, but Mom came in because she needed some food.
So, but yeah, I mean, in all honesty, congratulations, Chops. We're all happy for you.
Again, thank you so much.
So, all right, well, that's where we're going to leave this episode of Three Men in a War Game. And real quick, we're on Twitter, at the number 3 Men in a War Game. So we're easy to find. We talk, we share, we take pictures. I shared a picture of a amazing amount of Gaslands miniatures I found at Target, of all places.
Gaslands miniatures, you're so...
You know, which was really funny, because Jim Ortiz texted me not long after that. He goes, I ended up picking up a bunch of Gaslands stuff on the way home, and then I saw your tweet about it. He's like, it wasn't even
funny. It's so funny, because really, you just bought a bunch of Max Box
stuff. Which is great. Like, I don't even want to paint them. I just want, like, the Rancor Star Wars, you know, like, 70s child molester van.
The Darth Vader penis mobile that Matchbox made back in the 70s.
That's all I want. It's just a reason to have and play with some Star Wars toys.
Gaslands is the best.
Yeah. So, follow us on Twitter. We don't have a Facebook presence yet, but if you listen to us on iTunes, leave a review, and whoever you are that left a review, thank you. It was awesome.
We really appreciate it, guys. We like knowing that what we're doing is what you guys are wanting. So, you know, that feedback helps us point the show in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, we do this because we just like shooting the shit with each other and figured we'd document it. So if you guys like it too, I mean, it feels good. So leave us a review, get in touch with us, and thanks for listening. Sure, it was. Nobody believed that.